On behalf of the Juneau League of Women Voters, I would like to welcome our municipal candidates, CBJ officials who are here, league members, and Juneau citizens to the 2011 League of Women Voters Candidate Forum. The league has a 92-year history of advocating for voter registration, voter education, and voter rights. We are grateful for the local citizens who have declared their candidacies for public office. We encourage voters to educate themselves on the ballot measures by reviewing the CBJ election pamphlet recently mailed to residents. The pamphlet can also be downloaded on the CBJ website. In addition, this coming Sunday, the League and Juneau Empire Voters Guide will appear in the paper. And that's also available on the Juneau Empire website. This guide focuses on the candidates running for office, so you have two different venues there to get information, as well as the forum tonight. Now I would like to introduce the moderator for tonight's forum, Cheryl Geeby, and tonight's timekeeper, Dr. George Brown. Thank you all for coming out on such a stirring night as tonight.
Thank you. You just heard from Judy Andre, who's the current president of the League of Women Voters of Juneau. This program is being aired live tonight on KTOO. Many thanks to Jeff Brown for all his assistance, and thanks to Lori Sika from the City and Borough of Juneau for help with the sound and space. The forum is divided into two parts. First, the school board candidates for about 20 minutes, then the assembly candidates for about 45 to 60 minutes. The candidates here for school board are Sally Sadler and Sean O'Brien. Each candidate will give a one-minute opening statement, then questions will be asked rotationally of the candidates. The first respondent to a question will have 1 minute to respond. If any of the other candidates want to respond, each is allowed 45 seconds. Before the end of a segment, each candidate will be allowed 30 seconds to give a closing statement. Our timekeeper has a flag to wave at 10 seconds before a time is up. And at the last second, it'll wave and then I'll interrupt. The questions have been prepared by audience participants and given to league members to give to me. The goal is to ensure a variety of topics are covered. Sean O'Brien is first to begin. Tell us about yourself and why you are running for school board.
Thank you. And I just want to say, first of all, I appreciate the league's support on this and support over the last almost 100 years on the variety of important efforts you guys have been instrumental in helping us with. My name's Sean O'Brien. I'm a write-in candidate, so you won't see my name on the ballot. I want to point that out first. I'm a write-in candidate for the school board. I have lived in Juneau most of my life. Sue and I have five kids. Three of them are through the school system and done, and two of them are still in school at Floyd Dryden and at Thunder Mountain High School. I ran and successfully and was in the school board in 2005 to 2008 and have been involved directly with the schools for the last 15 years at least, both volunteering and site councils and PTOs, variety of other things. I think Juneau is a fantastic place, and the school board offers an opportunity for me to contribute and help my community. So this is a very important opportunity for community service, and I'd like to be able to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Sally, can you tell us about yourself and why you're running again?
I will. Thank you very much, Cheryl, and everybody for being here. I wish there were more of us to interview. While it makes our job a little bit easier, I don't think it's very healthy for our community. I wish there were more of us up here before you tonight. I am Sally Sadler. I am just about to complete the third year of my first term as a school board member. I'm running again because I really enjoy being part of a team that is designed to help students be responsible for their education, to really own their own education. In the past 2.5 years, we've developed a strategic plan that's around four major points: high student achievement, talented, capable teachers, engaging our community partners, and operating our district efficiently and effectively. And I think it's one of those living, breathing documents. It's not a report that goes up on the shelf, but it's something that we take strategic steps to get to. And I'll tell you, My husband said, I worked for 30 years in employment and training and education, and he said, Sally, you're going to quit working for money and go to work for free. And I said, oh, honey, no, I would never do anything that silly. And I find myself here and delighted to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. First question, we'll start with Sally. What is your definition of a successful school district?
A successful school district would be a school district that in my mind would be world class, that when we're hiring somebody to come work in Juneau, they would say, I want to go to that community because I know what that school district's about. They graduate students that are capable, have high academic standards, high quality staff that work with those students, and that means every single student, each student and every student has academic success. It doesn't mean that they just hit a certain standard, but each student does in fact progress and that they're well-rounded in that process. They're literate, they're good citizens, and know what they're going to do next when they leave, and they have the skills to get there.
Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, I much agree with that statement. I think it's right on. I would only add that I think the other measure of success is the ability to be independent and successful within the community after they get out of high school, able to perform in employment, able to successfully go into further education, and most importantly, be a contributor and a productive member of our community, and also have the ability to go to other communities and contribute as well. So ultimately, I think it's a long-term independence and contribution to their community and independence that goes with that. Very, very important.
Thank you. Okay. Next question, we'll start with Sean. Do you support the public official's financial disclosure proposition on the ballot? Why or why not?
Well, I certainly support full disclosure. From what I've read of the ballot proposition, it sounds like it wants to tone down and limit a little bit more the disclosure language and take a step away from the APOC. I personally don't have any problem with the APOC. At this point, I still want to read a little bit more on the initiatives and pros and cons. I guess I'd officially call myself as more needing more information and not quite decided, but conceptually I believe in full disclosure. I also, and I do full disclosure, but I also think that we got to be very careful about the rules that we implement to our candidates in the future and make them reasonable and make them user-friendly so we don't discourage even more people from running, and instead of just two of us being here in the future having less than that. So I think there has to be a reasonable balance between accountability and making sure that we're inviting and user-friendly for future candidates.
Thank you. Sally, comments on that?
Sure. As somebody who's filled out those APOC forms for the last 15, 17 years, it's not fun. It's kind of like going to the dentist. For those of you who don't like going to the dentist, I happen to like going to the dentist. But nonetheless, we have a responsibility to know that our people are operating, our elected officials are operating conflict-free from close economic associations. So I've been filling it out. I hope it doesn't serve as too much of a disincentive and discourage those capable, qualified candidates from running. And certainly we can look at ways to improve it, but at this point I think APOC served us well statewide and in our community. So I'm in favor of what we have in place.
Okay, thank you, Sally. Next question, we'll start with Sally. What are the graduation rates at each of the three high schools? How can we increase the graduation rates at those schools?
Well, they're not 100%. If this has stumped the school board member, I don't have the exact numbers at my fingertips. I can tell you it's not where we want it to be. And in addition to the students who don't walk across stage, we have those students who actually disengage and drop out. Those are the ones that drop out. I guess what we need to do is have each student own their own education and be the consumers of it. And I think students learning in context of their interests, their skills, and their abilities is a way for them to engage and understand why they need to learn their math, their science, their civics, that it will help them know what they need to do once they leave school. So making it a welcoming place is another real important issue. A lot of our students, we had a young man speak to the teachers during the welcome back breakfast, and he said a lot of students don't go to school because they don't feel welcome there. It's not a nurturing environment. And so we have a plan in place, and maybe there'll be another question, and I'll get a chance to elaborate on that.
Thank you. Sean?
I can't cite the exact numbers. I know that the kids that come into ninth grade, the same individuals that get out of high school, it's a dropout rate is around 50% overall, and I think it's even higher in some of our schools. So I agree with Sally. There's a lot of room for improvement there. The keys are, I do believe also, like Sally does, engagement. The kids have to see the value. It has to be relevant and has to be rigorous to challenge them. We know from other surveys that kids that have dropped out, it's oftentimes it's boredom and disengagement, not seeing the value that they need. You know, it's very important for the district to provide a quality, meaningful education for them, so they are positively challenged. So that's part of it.
Thank you. Another question. We'll start with Sean. Would you support a PE requirement for every grade every year, K through 12? John Kennedy promoted that when he was president. Obesity and health issues are our number one problem.
Yeah, that's kind of a front-loaded question. How could you say no to that, right? We have an incredible problem with obesity and inactivity with our kids. I think we need every opportunity. So I would say I do support PE being at every grade level. I think it's also an opportunity for physical education and health beyond just the physical aspects, nutritional and other things, which are important. But we've got to do everything we can to keep our kids active, and I think that's an important step. So I do support it.
Thank you. Sally?
Well, this might be our first area in which we disagree, Sean. I think having that physical activity is critical. I think mandating it is not necessarily the way to achieve that. It gets back to the student owning and wanting to need to do that activity and that exercise on their own. We have gym requirements right now, and we have students who are actually failing a class, a gym class, for a variety of reasons, and it has been something that the board has been tackling. What is it we need to do to make our PE classes more friendly, to get our students more engaged to the point that they really do want to participate? And so we're working along those lines. Your elementary students, they get out, they have their recess. Your middle school students, it's a little bit more problematic. We have covered playgrounds. But mandating every, I don't think so. I think we're very close without mandating.
Thank you, Sally. Next question. Have you read the school district's mission statement? If yes, tell us in two short sentences what it says in English.
I think our mission statement is student success in all walks of life would be the most simple, that they possess the academic skills and ability to be good contributing citizens and know and understand what it is they want to do after they leave our school system.
Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, the part that I remember the most about the mission statement is the contributing citizens, long-term contributing citizens, and the inference to independence, successful independence, and academic and vocational and employment success is certainly part of that. So I think it's very similar to what I recall as Sally mentioned.
Thank you. So next question, we'll start with Sean. What additional programs should be developed to assist high school students having difficulty passing the high school qualifying exams?
You know, I think any system that isn't able to support an individualized teaching approach where a student is able to be mentored and coached along specific needs is important. So programs that support individualized educational methodologies like digital one-to-one and the ability for students to get the kind of, and I have to stress, the kind of individualized attention that sometimes is needed that can't be provided in a larger classroom is critical. Those things, you know, kids sometimes need the additional help, and so programs that allow and foster that ability for a child to move forward and have their individualized educational needs addressed is important. And it's also important to make sure that the district is using effective methodologies and curriculum across the district that work. And so I know there's a lot of work going on with that as well.
Thank you, Sean. Next, Sally, any comments to that question?
I'm not not sure it's that we need additional programs. I think it's that we need to refine and deliver well the programs that we offer right now. For those of you who may not be aware, we have a new program called Advancement for Individual Determination, AVID, which is designed to give our students some skills to manage themselves and their classroom work for success. I think the measures of academic performance, the testing that we're doing, the diagnostic testing that's nationally normed, help students know what they do know, what they need to work on. I think that's a way of helping them. I think some of the programs that we offer in terms of the pathways and endorsements help kids get connected and therefore help them understand why they need to learn those science standards, those math standards, and the idea is that they'll have success. Once they're participating in those classes and mastering those concepts, they will, in fact, be able to pass the high school qualifying exit exam.
Thank you, Sally. Next question, we'll start with you. How would you respond to the claim that the second high school resulted in all the cutbacks and loss of programs that many actually predicted?
I don't think that has been a major contributing factor to the budget problems in our community and in our district. I think part of it has been escalating costs in terms of salaries. I think it has been a result of increased operating expenses in terms of fuel and some of those kinds of things. I feel that in my heart, I don't know that I can measure this, but because we have two schools and it's a smaller environment, it didn't result in smaller classrooms. Class sizes, but with students feeling like they're in a more nurturing environment in that smaller school, it's my hope and desire that we're retaining more of those students, that they're not dropping out, and that helps us realize the base student allocation for the number of students who are not dropping out, and that can help us. So I'm hopeful that while I'm not sure we'll be able to offer all of the programs, the full array that we've had over the course of time, I think the individual, the more personalized, smaller environment that students have in learning and context will, in fact, lead to more student success and more students coming into our school system.
Thank you. Sean, do you have any comments?
Well, I would just comment real quickly that, of course, with the second school and the smaller school results, we did get considerable additional funding to operate those schools, and so the net effect of seeing it diminished our programs and our ability to support the infrastructure is, in my opinion, a pretty weak argument. We did get a significant amount of additional money. I think the learning communities have been broken down in two smaller learning community environments, which I think is important. I think having the two schools with some differences to afford the opportunities of our kids to have more choice with some academic focus and structure of some differences is important. This community will grow. I think it's going to have additional employment and additional population in the future, and I think the capacity to take those students on and offer an enriched environment as an attractive aspect for new families is very important for Juneau as well. And I think the two schools contributes to that in a great way. So thanks.
Thank you. So the next question will be for Sean. We'll start. What should be the language program in Juneau School District?
What should the language program in the Juneau School District be? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's the one sentence.
Oh, here. Okay.
There's no...
Well, I mean, English language is our primary language and our functional language. I support the, you know, making sure that we have fluency and our primary operating language, but I also believe in diversity and the exposure of languages and what that does in terms of our enhancing our capacities for how we neurologically operate with a variety of language exposure. I also think it's respectful for other cultures to have some inclusiveness to what those languages look like. So I think a balanced approach is important. I'm also a believer in a variety of languages being included, and you know, having that as a balanced approach is important. But I think that we really have to be careful to make sure that we're hitting our primary language. So.
Sally.
Okay, I'm assuming we're talking about the foreign language program, so I'm hopeful that I'm on target. In the ideal world, I think we would be offering our foreign language components at elementary school age. That's where our students' brains are wired to really pick up additional languages. We're not at that point. We don't have the resource base at this point in time, but certainly at some point I think we need to be looking at doing what we're doing differently in our community. We've had a variety of elementary school language programs that for a variety of reasons have not been sustained. As you know, when the school board entertained the graduation high school task force credits, we did not go with the full number of foreign language requirements. Again, for me personally, it has to do with, do you mandate it, or is it smart, good business for our students to take any particular language? I think it is. It's incumbent upon students. It is a global society. The more languages we know, the better. Will we have the resources to offer the array that perhaps we would like to have? We probably won't be able to do that, but I think it is an important aspect of student learning.
Thank you. Next question for Sally. What do you think is the greatest challenge facing the school district today, and what do you want to do about it?
I think the greatest challenge is having success for each student and every student. As I said in my opening remarks, I think we do a lot of good. I mean, my son and daughter got a terrific education here, and it can be done, but right now we don't help every single student. So I think engaging our faculty, using some of the things that are part of our strategic plan right now, the MAP testing, the diagnostic testing, to help students know what they're able to do is probably a great thing that we can be doing to help our students, getting them to get excited about what they learn and learn in context. The single most important determinant of student success is the quality of a teacher. So it's incumbent upon us as a district to invest in our teachers and make sure we have the best and brightest, that we're paying them a fair and decent salary so they can get the job done and help each and every student. I think if you look at the strategic plan, you'll see a lot of those things that help us focus on activities that will help each and every student have some measure of academic success.
Thank you, Sally. Sean?
Yeah, I'm very much in alignment with Sally's statements. I think specifically supporting our infrastructure and our schools and our systems and our curriculum, identifying best practices, working smart. I think our teachers and our system are already working hard, so we've got to be smart. We've got to know how to use the data that we have, which has really grown over the years, and I think we're getting much better analysis. I think that it's really, really critical that we do find a way, and it's very difficult to engage and teach to every child, given the diversity of needs and challenges that are out there. I also think it's doubly difficult, given the fact we're now dealing with a budget, shortfall on top of everything else, and trying to meet these expectations with less dollars is even more challenging. So those are all very real concerns.
Thank you, Sean. It's a very simple question. What is your opinion of teacher tenure, good, bad? That's
teacher tenure.
Tenure, yes.
Is it who's first?
It would be, I think it would be Sean would be first.
Well, I think teacher tenure conceptually is a good idea, and I absolutely support it. I think that a lot of our more experienced teachers have worked extremely hard and are extremely capable and knowledgeable and deserve that tenure security status. I think the question always comes up is what happens to make sure teachers are held accountable, regardless of how many years they've spent with the district and they're doing a good job. I think most teachers, the vast majority of them, are or want to and need support to do that. So making sure we've got good leadership, good tools, good staff development, and good support for them is critical.
Thank you. Sally?
There's not much I can add to that one. Let me think. Teacher tenure. No, I think you covered it. I really don't have anything to add. Sorry.
Okay. We can go on to another question. The high school exit exam is geared to eighth grade learning. Why do so many have so much trouble passing it? Any guesses?
Wow. If I knew, this is to me first, right?
Yes.
Yeah, if I knew the answer to that, I think we would have the answer to a lot of our district problems and know exactly what it is we need to be doing. I think our students don't succeed at the high school. Not all of them succeed at the high school qualifying exit exam for a variety of reasons. Some of them aren't engaged. Some of them are not good test takers. There's the notion that it's a high-stakes test, and that sends fear to students. I know in our family we've always had a test early, test often point of view. It's just one way that you learn. It's just one way of being able to do things. Don't don't clutch, just go take it. But if it doesn't work for you, look for other things strategically that can help you. I think that some of our students find it a disincentive, drop out before they have the opportunity to take it and pass it. And I think I get concerned when I hear that we're teaching to the test, because I was actually had the opportunity to be part of the State Department of Education developing some of those standards, which are the things that the community and teachers said our students should know and be able to do. So I'm thinking there's a disconnect there somewhere that we need to identify and work on. And I'm out of time.
Thank you. Sean?
And I don't know the exact numbers. I know that the vast majority of our students do find a way to complete the test, but I also have to wonder a little bit about how much more important is we're really paying attention to the individualized testings that track kids from the time that they take it through multiple times and periods of time throughout their school careers and school experiences, the MAPS test and the work keys and other ones. I have to wonder a little bit about the high school equivalency exam, and it's an important poor indicator that we do have the numbers that aren't completing it, but I also have to wonder a little bit about what that really means and how it's an important indicator, but I also have to wonder about the assessment and data and evaluation that's going on in addition to the high school qualifying exam with the additional tests, and how much more information they seem to be providing us that tell us what, you know, how our kids are doing individually. I think that's even more important.
Thank you, Sean. The next question will be for you. There's a bond issue to replace AstroTurf, which after 10 years of use, grass seed is definitely cheaper. Is AstroTurf a luxury item? What do you think, and how do you plan to vote?
Okay, that was for me first.
Yeah.
Well, unequivocal, yes. I think the AstroTurf, I will be voting for it, and I support it. I can't imagine grass seed or a natural substance being used and meeting the demands and conditions that were required in this community for the variety of uses that that field gets over a long period of time, that it would ever hold up. I think the AstroTurf and watching, been here all my life, and watching what it was like in Juneau and how much that field has contributed to our community in so many different sports in so many different ways, with so many other fields and teams, and our kids being so much safer on that field than the rock and gravel that was out there when my kids were oldest kids were out there playing. I think it's a safety issue. I think it's an attraction for our community. I think it's a multi-purpose aspect. I see many more pluses than minuses in terms of short-term cost. So,
thank you, Sally.
As somebody who has played soccer in cleats on grass fields in this community for more years than I care to admit, I can tell you I don't see it as a luxury whatsoever. I think it's a reality for the kind of climate that we live in. I think, as Sean touched upon, it's a safety health thing where you have the opportunity to be on that kind of material as opposed to on gravel where you have your kids hitting hard ground, slipping. Grass seed may be cheaper in the short run, but the maintenance of a grass field would be very expensive operationally, just trying to keep and maintain grass. So I will be voting for the turf fields. I think it's a good investment in our students, in our community, because it's used for more than just students. Community members use it as well.
Thank you. Sally, please talk about pre-K education and how we can do better as a community.
Oh, I think that's something we really need to work on. And you talk about the fact, well, we haven't really talked much about the budget at this point, but there's something that we can really do to help position our students to reach school when they first hit school, to have some linguistics and mathematical skills that will help our teachers. I think there are some things that we can do. I don't know if anybody's heard some of the advertisements, the public service announcements about literacy and reading to your student every day, 20 minutes a day, 7 days a week, and what that exposure to that kind of literacy can do for a student. We had an opportunity at the School Board Association meeting last November to listen to a gentleman from Kennewick, Washington, and they went with a program like that, and they encouraged everybody in the community. If you don't have children, if you're a grandparent, find some children, go into the school, read, but getting our students exposed to literature early on in those linguistic and mathematic skills can go a long way toward promoting student success. I think we also have a lot of work to do. We've got a couple of pilot pre-K programs that we're operating. We need to continue to seek money to continue to operate those. I think there are ways that they can be improved and tweaked, but they're successful, and if we don't invest early and invest soon, we're going to be paying later on.
Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I totally agree with Sally's statement that literacy exposure and inclusion into that infrastructure for all of our kids at all ages is vital. I also think with technology being what it is in school and kids being attracted to the variety of technology forums that we have, we need to make sure that we're engaging them at every level, including the technological level, because that's where they're at. So, student engagement with literacy, making it interesting, making it fun, but making it happen is the key.
Thank you. This will be the last question, and we'll start with Sean. Alaska Native students fail and drop out of school, abuse, alcohol, drugs, and tobacco at a disproportionate level. Do you have a plan for improving their lot? What options are currently failing?
Oh, okay.
Sean.
Okay, no problem. That's been a significant issue in this community since the community has been going on, and lots of things have been tried. I think it's deep and wide, and I think the only long-lasting and sustainable solution has to come from collaboration from our Native community, our organizations that work with the population, our counselors, our schools. I know we've done a variety of task force around that. We've learned a lot. We still have a long ways to go. I think it's a learning continuum. It's an implementation continuum that is still underway. And it's absolutely vital that we continue to do a better job. And there is a lot of efforts going on along those lines. But I think the key has got to be a community-wide effort, a collaborative effort, and tapping into every resource and every angle that we possibly can. We're learning a lot about FASD. The effect that has is monumental across the board, and it's another area we have a lot of work to do.
Thank you. Sally?
I'm so sorry. Can I ask you to repeat the question?
Okay. I'm going to have to pull it out. Alaska Native students fail and drop out of school. Abuse of alcohol, drugs, and tobacco at a disproportionate level. Do you have a plan for improving their lot? What options are currently, it says failing, but that doesn't, I guess their options are failing, and what are we going to do to improve it?
Okay, thank you. I've got it. You may or may not know that the policy committee of the school board has recently evaluated many of the Native education programs, the cultural programs, to see about their effectiveness and are we operating and using those resources in the best fashion possible. We have a variety of programs, many of which serve our students very well. The Early Scholars Program at the high school level, the Tlingit Language Learning Program at the elementary school level. And I think providing services that meet those students' needs, meeting the student where they are, whether it's through the Choice Program, whether it's through Early Scholars, whether it's through connecting with their teachers in advisories, in smaller classroom units, making sure our students feel welcome and valued as members of the classroom in the community is really key. And we just recently established an Alaska Native Education Advisory Council to rejuvenate and work with some of the Native leaders to address some of those kinds of issues. And I see that I don't have time to tell you what some of those are, so I'm sorry.
Okay.
The man with the flag.
That was the last question. Closing statements. We'll start with Sally. A 30 seconds wrap up. Anything you'd like to say to the community?
To share with the community? I look forward to the opportunity if reelected. I know it's kind of ironic when there are only two of us running, but I do feel that it's an honor to serve our community, and I really, in my heart, believe each and every student can succeed. And I think the collegiate nature of the school board that we have right now, while there are some disparate points of view, there's a lot of respect on the board, and I think we have a good, healthy relationship with the district, and there's a strategic plan in place with some action steps that will help all of our students succeed, each student, every student, and I would welcome the opportunity to be part of the team to make that happen.
Thank you. Sean?
Well, I just want to add, we have a fantastic community in Juneau, and I think it can do nothing but get better. I think the educational component is is the most important. It is our future. It is our generation coming up and generations in the future. I just appreciate the ability and the honor to have the opportunity to provide community service. I think it ties in well with my background and my abilities. It truly is an honor, and I would love to have the opportunity to contribute. I just want to remind again people one more time that it's a write-in. I'm not on the ballot, so if they do choose to support me, they'll have to write in Sean, S-E-A-N, O'Brien, O-B-R-I-E-N. Thank you very much.
That concludes the school board portion of the forum. There will be music for about 5 minutes while the assembly candidates get seated.
And you're tuned into KTOO News in Juneau. We'll bring you right back to Assembly Chambers in just a few minutes, where the Juneau League of Women Voters will be asking questions of Assembly candidates. Just a few minutes. Time is 7:41.
Welcome back to the League of Women Voters of Juneau Candidate Forum for Assembly Candidates. The candidates here for Assembly District 1 are Brad Fluch and Jesse Kyle. For Assembly District 2, Randy Wanamaker. And Assembly Area-wide seat, Jenny Del Rosario, Lauren Jones, and Carlton Smith. As explained earlier, each candidate will give a one-minute opening statement. Then questions will be asked rotationally of the candidates. The first respondent will have 1 minute to respond. Other candidates who wish to respond can have up to 45 seconds. Before the end of a segment, each candidate will be allowed 30 seconds to give a closing statement. And George will be raising the flag at 10 seconds before the time is up, and waving it when it is up. The goal tonight is to ensure a variety of topics are covered. I'm going to begin with Brad for opening statements, and at the end I'll start with Carlton to do closing statements. So Brad, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running for Assembly.
Well, thank you. First, I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters. The work you do educating and informing the public on elections is an invaluable service, and we all owe you a great debt of gratitude. My name is Brad Fluch. I am a registered investment advisor located here in Alaska. I graduated from Washington State University, moved to Juneau in 1987, and tonight is my wife and I's 20th wedding anniversary, and so I'm here and not with her. So you can get an idea of just how important this is. The reason I'm running is when I look out to the future using my 20-some years as an investment advisor, I'm really concerned about the demographic and economic trends that JEDC has done such a great job documenting this declining, contracting economy Southeast Alaska's had. We need to change that trajectory, and I have the skills and background. And frankly, on the Assembly, I would be unique among the Assembly members with these kinds of professional skills. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jesse Kyle.
Thank you. My name's Jesse Kiel. I spell it funny, but you pronounce it just like the bottom of a boat. It's a Kiel.
Okay.
Let me add to the thanks to the League and to all of you for coming tonight, and to those of you listening on the radio for welcoming us into your homes. Congratulations, Brad, on 20 years. I'm not quite there yet, but mazel tov. I'm running for Assembly because Juneau is home. My wife and I are raising our two young daughters here. They're ages 7 and 9, and we believe in giving back to our community. For the last little more than 10 years, it's been both my honor and really my privilege, my pleasure, to serve Juneau by working for Juneau's state legislators. I'm here tonight running for assembly asking you to let me expand that service to our community by working hard on the assembly, by listening hard to folks in Juneau, to all of our neighbors, to take advantage of our opportunities as a community and to meet the challenges we face. I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Next is Randy Wanamaker.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm Randy Wanamaker, candidate for District 2 Assembly. The Assembly is losing a lot of experience this year and over the next couple of years. Most of the experienced Assembly members will be gone. In order to run our city government effectively, we do need people who understand how city government works and have a dedication to the community. I have that dedication to the community and the support of my family to serve again. I served you for 9 years before, three of those terms as the deputy mayor. I am willing to offer myself to service again because I have faith in the future of our community, but it's going to take hard work to preserve the quality of life that we have, to expand and grow our economy, and to create jobs for our young people so that they can have a future here. I've been asked by many people to participate in our government again because they would like to see me bring my experience back to the Assembly. I have experience in economic and employment development, and I'm willing to serve my community again, and I ask for your support to do that.
Thank you, Randy. Jenny Del Rosario.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jenny Del Rosario, and I was born in the Philippines, first generation. And I came to the United States for an opportunity in a group study exchange program. It's about cultural exchange. And I believe that diversity is about inclusion, is about unity, and diversification is essential to growth. And I want that there's diversity in the Assembly. And I believe that good government is important because we are fiscally accountable to our citizen, and we have fiduciary responsibility of managing the city's financial resources. And I'm here is because I have a passion for volunteering for 20 years, and I found that community service is very rewarding. That's why I'm running for public office. And for the opportunity given, I will serve.
Thank you. Lauren Jones.
My name is Lauren Jones. My wife and I have lived here since 1975. I'm retired from the state of Alaska, retired in 2003. I'm running because, as Randy said, we're losing a lot of experience on the Assembly. And I think through the years that I have worked for the state, where I've worked for a state legislator, I've learned a lot about local government. I've also served the city through the hospital board, through Catholic Community Services, through Hospice and Home Care Board. Through all those experiences, I think I have learned the skills necessary to operate as a member of a team, as a member of the Assembly. I have learned to listen. I have learned to analyze well. And I've learned to make some pretty tough decisions. Came to work with the state when we were having a lot of money, and I worked through the downturn. And I know what it is to have to cut back after growth. And I think we're facing some really tough times, but also some great opportunities. And I think it's a time for me to serve, and it'll be a real pleasure to serve. Thank you.
Thank you. Finally, Carlton Smith.
Thank you. My name is Carlton Smith, and I'm running for the future of Juneau. In order to have a bright future for Juneau, all of us have to have choices. And if you're like me, I have two sons that have just come through the school system. It's my desire that they have a lot of choices. Affordable housing offers them a choice. Good employment options, many employment options, offer them more choices. We must develop Juneau as a regional center that we already are for top-flight health care in this community. We can offer Juneau up as a regional center for career education. We can develop it further as a fishing port to export our product. We have right now a burgeoning mining support services industry and a retail industry. On the Assembly, I will work for choices for all of us because I'm working for Juneau's future.
Thank you. The first question, we'll start with Jesse Keel. There were a couple, two of the same, similar. One, the borough is facing a $5 million shortfall for the 2013 budget and a $2.5 million shortfall for 2014. What is your approach to budget reductions? And then the other question there, are there specific areas in which CBJ can achieve budget efficiencies? So I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah, I think the questions are closely linked. One of the things that I have done for several years for Juneau state legislators is staff the Senate Finance Committee. And in doing that work, it really is the day-to-day oversight of the executive branch budget. That's the sort of work that it's going to take on the Assembly to deal with the challenges that are coming at us. Our city finance department, I think, generally does a very good job with their projections, and I'm concerned about having the resources to meet our community's needs and to keep moving Juneau forward. So digging into the details and looking and doing all the homework, working with folks in our community and talking with the various department heads and my fellow assembly members, there's no substitute for the hard work it takes to dig all the way to the bottom of the budget. And I'm looking forward to doing exactly that.
Thank you. Randy, you have any comments to that question?
Yes, thank you. The largest single item of the city's budget is personnel. The city's already cut all of the expenses it can for pencil supplies, deferred purchases. Personnel is where the cost savings are. There's two ways to balance your budget. One is to keep cutting things, and that includes cutting jobs. The second is to grow your economy and grow jobs. I think it's unavoidable to have some position reductions, but my focus is going to be working to grow our economy, grow our employment base, and diversify our economy and employment base so that we don't have to reduce essential services. We don't have to settle for less than the best and can maintain the quality of life that we have. Every job is important, and I'm going to work to protect every job that we can by growing our economy and growing our employment base.
Thank you. Jenny? Do you have any comments
to
that question?
Yes, I would like to comment on that one. Budget cuts is an unwelcome issue for everybody. But hard times like this, we see that revenues are less and expenditures are increasing. We have to first look at duplications and overlapping services, simple as that. We either merge or eliminate it. And if revenues is down, then we can go on conservation. We opt to renew. As what they said, it will be in the ballot for the increase in taxes. But taxes is not necessary. But we have to challenge ourselves to budgeting in the city level. If we can budget our money at home, you'll be surprised that we can do it in the city. We have good people that does this thing.
Thank you. Lauren?
I think that the one thing I've learned in my years of experience is trying to establish some benchmarks so that you know what it is you want to preserve within the community. I know we talk a lot about education. You just heard from the school board members. The city contributes a significant portion to the school district, and that's one that I would look at trying to keep. I think also where the money comes from, if it's a reduction in sales tax revenues or a reduction in property tax revenues, it's a different issue than if it's just a reduction in money that comes from the state for capital projects. And we need to look at those kinds of issues to determine where we might cut back.
Thank you, Lauren. Carlton?
I think it's important to note that the 10-year trend line in total CBJ expenditures has gone from $102 million in the year 2001 this year to $276 million. That's for total expenditures in city government. And Randy is correct that salaries and benefits are a large part of that. I'm not in a position today to tell you how I would look at trimming the budget, but that is the job of our manager, and that is also the job of our chief financial officer to advise us. And even though the Assembly has, at the present time, this budget deficit in front of it, we've got to do some very focused work in the next 4 months prior to the departure of our manager and also our chief financial officer.
Thank you. Brad?
Well, I've spoke with a lot of citizens, and not one of them has asked to increase the tax rate, either on property or sales. So that's not really an option. So I'm, as I said, you know, earlier with the JEDC trends, we need to turn the trend lines around and start going up instead of down. Expanding the amount of we only have two ways to raise revenues. One is to change the rate or to increase the amount of taxable sales or increase the amount of property to be taxed. And that both of them requires growth of the economy. Both of those will provide more sales, which the business likes, and then property will solve also a lot of our other issues. So Randy's absolutely right. Growth of the economy is key to the budget problems. If I do have to cut, basic necessities, police, fire are sacred, education, and start looking at the other things that are less needy.
Thank you, Brad. Randy, do you support Proposition 5, the proposed 15-cent tax on plastic bags? Why or why not? Sorry. Maybe I should...
Shall I postpone? You know, I think you meant me.
Yeah, well, I think we'll start with Jenny on this question.
Let me have a... Let Jenny start and I'll get it later.
Okay. Jenny, would you take that question?
It's not about... it's not about taxing 15% or not at all. It's about changing our lifestyle. Of course, plastic floating in an ocean is not a good sight. But we have to start right now being concerned and aware of our environment. And preserving our environment is changing lifestyle. It's because it's time for us to be aware that our environment is very important to us. The safety of our family and our environment is the most important thing. So it's not about taxing. It's about changing our lifestyle and being aware of that it's important that we conserve and reuse things over and over, because that's the way it is for us to be able to protect our environment.
Thank you. Lauren, do you want to respond?
Sure. I have not made up my mind yet. The arguments through my head are about the same as going on in the community. I think it's very, very important that we decrease the amount of waste. I want to protect the oceans and the water. I don't know if putting a tax on there works. For me, I enjoy the incentive of trying to remember to take the bag out of the back of my Jeep when I go into the grocery store, instead of tonight where it was there and I went into the grocery store and bought more than I should have and left with a plastic bag. At the same time, I'm not convinced in my mind that the tax is the appropriate thing to do at this time. I might very much better just support banning them.
Thank you. Carlton?
First of all, I'd like to say that it's a wonderful thing that we've got the initiative process, and this has brought this issue to us, and it has served to raise more awareness about the issues of all the issues of solid waste. In terms of my own preference on this, how I feel about it, I would not support it. I feel that it does put an unfair burden on folks that can't afford groceries to begin with. I feel like it should not be a place for government at this time, and therefore I would not support it.
Thank you. Brad?
No, I would not be in support of this. This is the exact problem why government gets in the way of solutions and not finding a solution. A plastic bag is a reconfigured form of oil. I don't see anybody standing out at the dump pouring gasoline into the ground. Why are we dumping our plastic bags, which is basically oil, into the ground? Bernie Carl is the guy up in Chino Hot Springs, and he has a plastic bag burner that generates electricity. Now, why don't we pay the public to bring us their plastic bags and use it as fuel? That's a private sector solution. That's the type of thinking that I would apply to the problems in the community.
Thank you. Jesse?
You know, I want to echo what Carlton said about being a fan of the initiative process. We have got to use, as a community, fewer of these disposable plastic bags. I never go out on the Mendenhall wetlands, you know, duck hunting or walking the dog or whatever it is, but that I come back with a bunch of plastic garbage. And it doesn't stop there. It floats out and the ocean from there. It's harmful stuff. And so I'm not as good as I necessarily should be about bringing the reusable bags. I know I need to be. And I really appreciate this debate. All of that said, I'm not comfortable with the initiative the way it's structured. I have concerns that it applies to certain stores and not all. I have concerns about anything that hits people when they're buying groceries. So reluctantly and hesitantly, I'm a no vote.
Thank you. Randy?
Thank you. I do not support the tax on plastic bags, and I genuinely applaud the people for bringing this issue to the surface. There are other solutions and better solutions, but the tax itself will hurt the people least able to afford it, and those are the working poor of our community. What we can do is ask the pass legislation that says you must use biodegradable plastic bags if you're going to offer them in your store. They don't cost any more than ordinary plastic bags, and they degrade very quickly. Fishing line is like that these days. But this points out the need for what we truly have to solve, and that's our solid waste problem in this community. We need a complete solid waste management solution, because we cannot afford to poison our wetlands any further with the human waste that's going into it every single day. I am going to work for a total solid waste solution for this community so that we can reclaim our wetlands and be the pride of the state for being a beautiful capital city, not for having a garbage dump in the middle of the capital city. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. We'll ask you a question now. You'll be the start for this question. What is your opinion on the development or reopening of the AJ mine? What should the city's role be with regard to the mine?
That's me?
Yes.
Okay. My opinion on reopening the AJ mine is that the city is the majority owner of the property, and it can set the terms of any opening. That's just a legal right it has. And it can do that without stepping on its own regulatory authority and powers. The city has a responsibility to understand the economic consequences, the environmental consequences, and benefits of reopening that mine and what it can do for the citizens of the community. And it needs to make an informed decision based on the complete economic and environmental factors. And there's already been an economic study done that says it is economically possible to reopen that mine, and the city will enjoy millions in revenues. Those revenues could buy us a new water system and help stave off some of the budget problems that we have. And it would be a bridge to our economic future as we work to diversify our economy in other ways. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Nick, Jenny, do you have a comment on the AJ mine?
The mine's location itself is not a good location. But in the eventuality that the mine's open, since the city owns most of the land, they should be responsible of making the study and making sure when we open, that they make sure that it is safe, that it will not adversely contaminate our soil, air, and water, and that making sure that it is safe for the city, for the citizen of the city, and at the same time, if it opens, in the eventuality it opens, I know that it will generate employment, but also at the same time, responsibility and accountability should be taken into consideration.
Thank you. Lauren?
I think the city, as the owner, has the responsibility to learn how best to open the mine, if that's our choice. But I think we need to convince and educate the public that that it's safe, that we can protect our water supply, that we can interface where the mine is going to interface with tourism, which is our other major downtown source of economic development. But I think that not only do we need to look at it, but we need to somehow involve the community. I think that was a good part of what the initial task force did and reading their report. But the community is still split. The community is not yet agreed that we can do this safely. And until the assembly can get the public to agree, I think we need to proceed very cautiously.
Thank you. Carlton?
As has been pointed out, we're in a different role now that we're kind of policing ourselves as an owner and making the decisions as to next steps here. But the number one item that needs to be resolved, and I think can be resolved fairly quickly, is the issue of safe drinking water. And once that issue is resolved, and of course there's also an interest in creating another look at a duplicative water system, then we can move forward and have to likely hire a minerals consultant who would advise us because we're not an operator. This is going to be a 5 to 7 year project if it happens, $250 to $300 million. Those are the logical steps.
Brad?
Well, it's as it's been pointed out, that the AJ is a substantial asset of the city, a financial asset, and could produce a stream of revenue into the general fund in addition to creating jobs and opportunities. I asked this question of the new Coors CEO, and he had really three things to say is you got to make sure that it's worker safety, community safety, and environmental safety. And if you can't do it right, don't do it. And I think once the city, you know, goes through the process, the permitting process, which we've all went through, was established, is let's see what the process says. And I encourage the city to expend the funds to go through the permitting process.
Jesse.
Thank you. It's an important question. And we know here in Juneau that it's possible to do mining right in southeast Alaska. We see it at Greens Creek. I think we see it at Kensington. The bar to do it right in our drinking watershed is higher. And I think you heard one of my colleagues say earlier that there's not a great reservoir of goodwill in the community on this issue. So we really have to proceed carefully. I have great concerns about our water supply and its adequacy and whether it's at risk. So I think it's a very good thing that the Assembly is proceeding with a water study. I see I'm almost out of time. Let me just say this. I'm very concerned about the way the Assembly appropriated money for that water study. It was $250,000 of your dollars for the water study, or some engineering, or some legal work, or whatever else happened to come up having to do with it. That's not how you appropriate tax dollars. We need to be more responsible with money than that.
Thank you. The next question will start with Lauren. What are your specific ideas for bolstering and diversifying Juneau's economy?
The worst question to ask somebody who's... I think we need to look at those services, kinds of businesses that are environmentally friendly, that are the core part of who we are. When I look at the docks and harbors and I see almost no fishing-related or maritime businesses at the waterline, when I see the city not being very friendly to the commercial fishing fleet, I think that is an area that we could look at relatively quickly, how we deal with the maritime issues with fishing fleets. A lot quicker than we can the mine, which if it is 5 to 7 years away, that's a long time to wait for economic development. We could do a lot more closer on. I think other issues around tourism we need to look at.
Thank you. Carlton.
We are the bright spot in southeast Alaska's economy. And what we do, even in hard times, is we build on our strengths. And we have a terrific medical services industry here in Juneau. We can build on that. Those are the right kinds of jobs. We also have a tremendous career education complex here between the unions and their training program and the university. We need to build on that. Commercial fishing, we need to build our ability to export our product from Juneau. Mining support services is just beginning, and it's bringing new jobs into Juneau. And then finally, retail. Our neighbors are looking to us as the regional center, and we need to go to our strengths, and that's the outline.
Thank you. Brad?
Well, the first and most important thing we need to do to bolster our economy is build a road. And once we get that road built, that'll help out a lot. Other things that we can look at is people that I've talked with are looking at JEDC and say, you know, what are they doing to help, you know, diversify and build the economy? And maybe we need to do some redirecting at JEDC and get them to start marketing Juneau as a place to do business. Other things that people have suggested are we need to address our cost of living, but ideas such as a business park or an economic development zone. You know, the brewery can produce more beer, and they can sell whatever they produce. They just don't have access to land and facilities that they can actually increase their capacity. I think we have a couple other businesses, you know, fishing, the hospital, are also great economic engines that we could better utilize.
Thank you, Brad. Next, Jesse. Bolstering and diversifying Juneau's economy.
In 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Excellent. That should be easy. Thank you to those who came before me who mentioned our commercial fishing sector, who mentioned our university. Excellent engines of Juneau's economy, excellent sectors to work on. I think there are some other things that we can do. I think first and foremost, we need to address Juneau's housing shortage. Juneau's housing shortage is so intense right now that it's like a weight on the back of this community's economy, and there are people who could get jobs here who can't take jobs here because there is no housing here, to say nothing of whether they can afford housing. There's no place to rent. I think we need to work on services that help our senior citizen population, which is growing. I think we need to work on extending North Douglas Highway. That's a project the city has begun, and I think we can access some land that's planned for development and generally agreed as development land. And I've run out of time. So much for my prediction.
Okay, Randy?
Thank you. One of the things we can do is make sure that some things are already set in place are followed through on. For instance, when we began development of the Lena Point Research Facility, one of the things that was agreed to was that as people retired in the lower 48 who did not want to come up to Alaska to work in that research facility, that they would be allowed to retire down there, but when they retired, their positions would be transferred to Juneau. We need to make sure those important research positions, good-paying jobs, are followed through, that they are actually transferred upon retirement, that the government honors its pledge to Juneau that it do that. Juneau worked to give them something in order for them to have the facility. We just need to make sure that people are doing their part. The affordable housing for every level, but especially affordable starter homes, is the other important thing that we can do now. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenny?
Save the last. First of all, I would say that it's about efficiency, because Juneau should take the lead that live up to the expectation as a capital city. Efficiency in our infrastructure, in our ferry system, in our transportation, at the same time our school system, and healthcare, and the senior affordable homes. Because if we don't have this in place, we cannot invite people to invest here. We cannot keep our people here. There will be a brain drain getting people out of here. So we have to do what we have and make sure that we maintain and keep and sustain what we have and make Juneau the capital city that we can be proud of.
Thank you. The next question will start with Carlton. What do you think the CBJ should do, if anything, to address the housing issues in Juneau?
Thank you for that question. We do not have a shortage of land in Juneau. We do not have a shortage of talented builders. We do not have a shortage of experienced developers. What we have is a shortage of financing. Keep in mind that we're just 3 years, it's just been 3 years since the financial meltdown, and we are quite remote. So it's reasonable to assume and understandable that local banks would be hesitant to build speculative housing. So what we need to do is partner with some of our mining companies and see that some projects get built.
But what we need to do is convene not another committee, not another forum, but we need to convene a group of players that can make this happen.
Thank you. Brad?
Well, I've been talking with a lot of the people in the community, and they really think that the number one problem, Carlton, you know, says right, we have land, we have builders, we have developers. What we don't have is a city planning department that's conducive to building in the community. What we have is the policies, the permitting process, community amenity requirements, wetland, and other regulations are driving the cost up so substantial. When you look at the senior housing grant, we had to give money to expand an existing apartment building, an EIS. We have to file an environmental impact statement to expand senior housing. We have a permitting process problem. These are all self-inflicted that could be addressed by the assembly.
Thank you. Jesse Keel?
You know, the we mentioned the Affordable Housing Fund that Juneau has, and it has about $500,000 in it. It's designed to be a revolving loan fund for nonprofits to build senior housing, low-income housing, assisted housing. I think that the fact it's already helping one project move ahead is good. I think with some additional resources, it can help build some additional housing in those categories. But in terms of developing additional affordable housing, I think the city does have some land that's available and buildable, and if we work carefully and well, we can make that land available for residential development. And then we can also work with a tweak in state law that may allow us to make some minor concessions in our tax system, not to write checks to developers, but to help them with financing affordable housing projects.
Thank you. Randy?
Guaranteed financing for projects is an absolute must. We need affordable starter homes for young couples beginning their lives in this community, and we need mid-level executive management homes. Those things are serious shortages in our community, and people won't work here, move here to take positions because they are lacking in this community. They're simply not available. If we can get those things underway, then we can have people come here, take jobs, expand our economy, and contribute to our tax base. That's what we need to do, and it's the kind of thing that I will work to help ensure that it happens. Thank you.
Jenny.
Well, the shortage of housing, you know, we can look at the community development department in implementing land use. We have lots of lands, building codes and engineering ordinances. So housing, we have to see where it's exactly where we can build new residences or subdivision that are places where we can, that our transportation are accessible and it's affordable. And you know how it is with Alaska. We have to maintain our home because of the weather. So we have to build quality homes and affordable homes. And we have to see that we build this in developments where it is accessible to everybody.
Thank you. Lauren?
In talking with a lot of young couples that are raising families here, they don't necessarily perceive a shortage of housing. They perceive a shortage of housing where they feel that they live in a community where they're not just simply isolated. They want to see rental housing they feel much more comfortable raising their children in. They would like to see rental housing near a park, rental housing near areas where they can shop, where they can feel like there's a community. One couple explained that they would like to see a second downtown area where they could raise their kids, feel like there's a community, they could walk in their neighborhoods, they could walk in their parks. So I think we need to work with developers to look at how we can develop housing that gives us a real sense of community so that the young people really do want to live there.
Thank you. The next question will be for Brad. Okay. The public transit system has buses that are almost always full. What can we do about this? And I know it's especially in the summertime, the tourists are on the buses and So,
well,
the bus system, the Juneau bus system.
One of the other questions that the Thane Neighborhood Association mentioned was how do we clean up the buses? And there's a lot of buses. We have a lot of school buses. We have a lot of tourism buses. We have a lot of city buses. And every one of them stinks and burns diesel. And there's got to be a way that we can put to use all of our school buses and our city buses and somehow merge those two systems. And if we took a more global approach to our entire public transit system, you know, incorporating how the schools are, how the parents want to move, they could ride to school and work with their children. I think there's a lot of alternatives here. I don't know, but I'd sure like to talk to the public more about it.
Thank you. Jesse?
I was born and raised in Anchorage, and before I finally got it right, moved to Juneau. And I don't hesitate for a minute to tell folks that Juneau has the best public transit system in the state. We ought to be proud of that, but that's not the question. The question is, what can it be? What should it be? And the issue that we have is so many people in Juneau rely on our buses to get to work, to get to shopping, to get to the services and the community amenities that we need. Public transportation is essential not just to the feel of the community, but to the community's economy and to keeping Juneau running. So we need to make some very smart but targeted investments in improving it further.
Thank you. Randy?
Thank you. I ride the bus system. I gave up my car a year ago, and I ride the bus system. And it is efficient, but it's also expensive. There's no way to add additional units to our fleet without adding extra personnel or more maintenance costs, and I don't know how we would do that right now. I think we can make improvements to the types of buses that we are running and get better efficiencies from fuel, but I don't know how we can extend what we're already doing, and what we're doing now we're doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenny?
Well, first we have to invest in an efficient bus system. And I think it might not be a bad idea if we have to go on carpooling. It will be fun. And maybe a little more consideration in bicycle lanes. That will encourage people to get out of the bus and take the bicycle and carpool with friends. And since we only have that highway and we have small roads, and because of the density of people, of people here, I think that would be a very good idea. It would be fun and healthy. More bicycle lanes, maybe. And carpooling would be a very good idea to have, you know, conserve fuel. It would be fun.
Okay. Lauren?
I agree that we need to look at more efficient buses. There may be ways to operate smaller buses at the higher commute times, so that rather than run one bus that comes in from the valley, we would run, you know, four or five every 5-10 minutes, make it a little bit more convenient. When you talk to people that work shift work, that work weekends, the bus system is less efficient. It stops running fairly early in the evening, sometimes doesn't operate on Sundays and holidays when people actually do work. So I think we need to look in those areas as well.
Thank you. Carlton?
I visited with the Public Works Director the other day on this very topic, and he reminded me that we are the 25-mile-long city. And much like how the police department looks at delivering their services, the municipal transit system has to solve the problem of when you change a schedule for Nugget, that changes the schedule for Mendenhall, which changes the schedule for all buses coming in to the new transit center. So I know that they're working on this. I know that they have their eye on the ball when it comes to efficiency. And because we are the 25-mile-long city, it's a very complex problem.
Thank you. Okay, our next question will start with Jesse Keel. Do you support the public official's financial disclosure proposition on the ballot? Why or why not?
I'm voting no on that proposition. And I'm voting no for two reasons. The first is that as the capital city, I think Juneau needs to lead by example. And the example we need to set as a capital city is for transparency and disclosure and openness not just in government, but also in the government officials' finances. Juneau voters need to know, deserve to know, where your elected officials' bread is buttered. That's the broad strokes. In the specifics, I'm very concerned that that initiative or that ballot measure would do away with the need to report how much income you get when you have a source over $1,000. My wife teaches piano lessons. And market rate, you could pay $1,000 a year for piano lessons. I'll have to tell you, the voters, who my wife's piano students are. That's fine. You deserve to know if somebody with business before the assembly starts paying $1,000 a month, because they're not paying that much for piano.
Thank you. Randy?
I'm voting in support of it because I believe that the ultimate goal of AIPAC is they want to put this financial information on the Internet. That's not only a violation of everybody. Every citizen in Alaska has a right to privacy. It's a constitutional right. This is an invasion of that privacy area. Everything that is going to be disclosed has always been available to every citizen in Juneau simply by coming to the city anyway. Nothing will change by the city adopting its own form. You will still have the information. It will still be there. There has never been a problem. But we don't need to put people on the Internet and have them exposed to fraud and identity theft. And let me tell you, as a family, we've already been hit with credit card and debit card problems. It's ongoing, and we try to be secure. Posting people on the Internet is just inviting trouble, and there's no provision for making anybody whole who becomes victimized. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenny?
Well, I support the financial disclosure
proposition.
Proposition, yes, because I believe that as a public official, we are transparent anyway. We are responsible to you. And the city public official have a fiduciary responsibility and fiscal responsibility to the citizens and city of Juneau and not the state. Accountability is our responsibility too. And what happens in the city should be dealt with in the city and not in public, you know, where you be in violation of privacy. What happens in the city of Juneau stays in the city of Juneau.
Thank you.
I think that's what I believe.
Lauren?
I'm a no vote. I think that there's a trust between the people that elect you to office and those who are in office. I think the process the city went through on this ordinance did not enhance that trust. In fact, probably threw up some red flags to a lot of people about that trust. I have completed AIPAC forms when I was employed with the state for 13 years. I see absolutely no reason to go away from that at this time. If we can come up with a system that enhances the trust between the citizens and its elected officials, I would support it. This is not the vehicle.
Thank you. Carlton?
I am in favor of the proposition, primarily because I'd like to see that be a Juneau process. In terms of any conflict of interest, the rules are very clear with the assembly that if there is a perceived conflict or you believe you might have a conflict, you go straight into the city attorney's office and you discuss it before any vote is taken. And I will say also that I believe that the AIPAC rules, you know, have had a chilling effect. They have discouraged a number of qualified people from coming, standing forward and filing for public office. And, you know, that's too bad, but I think that's the truth.
Thank you. Brad?
I'll be a no vote. I have no problem with the current AIPAC system, and I found dealing with AIPAC to be really straightforward and very good people that work there. My main concern was the public perception that the CBJ system would be somehow less rigorous, less transparent than the current AIPAC system. I think the city and borough of Juneau needs to be more transparent. One of the things I'd like to see here is that these assembly meetings are broadcast live over the Internet. A CBJ managed system would add an unnecessary expense to our budget, which we already know we're going to have shortfalls coming, and I see absolutely no benefit in incurring those expenses.
Thank you. And we started with you. So the next question is to Randy. And The library is planning to apply for a 50% state match construction grant to construct a new Valley Library at Diamond Park. The Friends of the Library are planning to bring $1 million to this effort. Would you support a new Valley Library construction in cooperation with the Friends of the Library, other grantors, and the state?
At this time, no. I do not believe it's the type of expense that the city can take on. We have a new swimming pool, we have a new high school, we have a new public works building. All of those are bonds issues that people are starting to pay for. Our economy is not in a position to add something else to the bond market and for the taxpayers to begin paying additional taxes on. It is something for the future. We have a usable library where it is now, and I'm a proponent of libraries, but it's not something that we can afford to do at this time. In a few years when our economy has strengthened, I would probably support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenny?
I resonate with you, Randy. We have a usable library, and we would give fundings to the library if they need more fundings to make it better or make it efficient, but they are right now. And in the near future, if there's a need for it and we have the money, then why not? Because it's something that our community needs, and our student needs to go to the library and to be able to help them out. The library is the best place to go. And it would be very good if we have the money to do it. I would support it.
Thank you. Lauren?
I think that at this point I would be in support of it. I think that we need to look at the services that are in the valley. The majority of the population is living out there now. I think it could be a core part of the community out there. I'm concerned, as Randy is, with exactly how we would fund it, whether we would bond for it, exactly how we would do that. But I think on the face of it, it is an issue that we need to take up, study seriously, determine what the finances are. But I would do that from the basis of looking for a way to fund it, not a way not to fund it.
Thank you. Carlton?
As I understand it, the city would be in this process bringing the value of the land to the table, and the Friends of the Library would, you know, contribute their portion. Not knowing at this time what the total cost of the project is, I really can't comment about whether I would support it or not, but I would also suggest that if we can put together a sports center, as we've done with the Community Foundation, we ought to look at that as an alternative.
Thank you. Brad?
Well, I have no strong opinion one way or the other. I'd like to see what the project is, what the project financing would be, what the operating costs would be over the next, you know, 10 to 20 years. Those would be the type of issues that I'd like to see. But then again, you know, I'd like to hear what other members of the community, because I know that the Juneau Arts and Community Center or Arts and Humanities Council would like a performing arts center, and there's some other needs that and desires that the community would like. And so I'd have to weigh the library's needs and desires with the other of the community.
Thank you, Brad. Jesse?
I have to confess that everything I know about this notion I've learned in the last 5 minutes. there are elements of this that appeal to me, the notion of having our library closer to the Valley High School, sparing us the lease costs, the idea that someone else might pick up 50% plus $1 million. I don't know 50% plus $1 million from how much. I need to learn more. I need to dig into the details on this one. We certainly need good community facilities in multiple areas of Juneau. You can't have them all in one part of town. But I'd need to do the details on this one. I hope folks will come talk to me.
Thank you. The next question will start with Jenny, and it's... what solutions would you support for the problem of chronic inebriates on the downtown streets? Would you pursue an investigation of a free housing for our homeless chronic inebriates, as has been done in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Seattle? And anything to improve the situation? Any recommendations?
Well, I would say that it's important for the CBJ to be aware of this problem very much and and the risk and the danger it brings to our citizen. And I support rehabilitation for some problems of homelessness. And the result of this ones on the problems of society is because we have to see the core of the problem. And I would support the not the relocation, but the homelessness is a social and civic problem. It is a lot of things that the city has to look at first before we can deal with it.
Thank you. Lauren?
Nothing is free. I think the Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Seattle housing projects work well in those communities. It works well in those communities because they had some excess capacity in terms of motels and hotels that were in the core part of where the public inebriates lived anyway. But we have to do something. It's an issue for the public safety. It's an issue of the health for the chronic inebriates. I think that if we could establish some housing for these people, it would be really good. If we could establish it in a way that they could earn some income and help support it, would make it even better. But the situations in Anchorage and Fairbanks and in Seattle are a little bit different than Juneau in that they did have the excess capacity where they could use it. We would have to build it.
Thank you. Carlton?
Oh, we're talking about between 25 and 35 individuals, and that cost is roughly $2.5 million total. One-third comes from local liquor taxes, one-third from state grants, one-third from federal grants. When I was chairman of the board of the Salvation Army in Anchorage, we convened a forum community-wide to make sure everyone was on the same page as to what the problem is. A lot of these folks are dual diagnosed. It's a complex problem. So that would be the first step as far as building a facility for them to live in. The Mental Health Trust has made that move in Anchorage. I think we need to observe that first before we look at it.
Thank you. Brad?
Well, this is the first I've heard that there are solutions to the problem. I've heard a lot of people mention things, and if there are solutions, I don't know why we haven't implemented them. So if you have a solution, you know, please tell me so I will support it. I don't think it's that simple. You know, we've tried a lot of things. We've spent a lot of money, and we haven't gotten anywhere. And I think we need to really fundamentally relook at what we're doing and how we treat these people. Several years ago, the immediate thoughts I have was several years ago, the state introduced the idea of everyone has to be carded, regardless of your age. What if we were to have, and you were a designation on your identification that didn't allow you to purchase alcohol? You know, there's some things that we can do, but like I say, no one has found a solution because they've been here, they're everywhere, and, you know, they're going to be part of our community. We need to deal with them.
Thank you. Jesse?
Unfortunately, I don't have a magic wand, so I don't have a solution to addiction either. But there are some things that can mitigate the problem and that can help people to sometimes get back on their feet and sometimes we can't be the kind of community, and we aren't the kind of community that lets people freeze when the taku winds blow in the winter. And so we need to look hard at what we can do for these chronic public inebriates. And try and get a handle on this problem. You know, the city charter actually has a provision that requires Juneau to have an advisory board on questions of addiction and alcoholism. We don't. I think the first thing we might want to do is what the charter tells us we have to do and convene some folks who know what they're talking about to advise us on our very best options.
Thank you. Randy?
Thank you. This is an ongoing problem and one the Assembly has worked with for a long time. We have a social services advisory board, and we have Rainforest Recovery Center up at Bartlett. And these organizations give us advice on how to deal with a very difficult problem with many complex issues for a variety of people. It's not easy. It's not a police problem. It's a community social problem. It's an illness problem. It's a mental health problem. and there are people who will not respond to treatment or aid of any kind, no matter what you try to do to get them, to help them. And yet we can't give up on them because it's less expensive to work with them than it is to ignore them. And we do have a responsibility towards them, to help them. And some lives have been turned around because of intervention. I will listen to the advice of the advisory board and do my best to fund the programs that will work for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Next question will be for Lauren. Do you support the extension of the 3% area-wide sales tax? Why or why not?
Yes, I do. I think that this is a tax that supports the basic function of the city. I believe that I forget how many years we vote on this issue. I've been asked whether we should stop making it temporary since it's been about 25 years of temporary sales tax. But I firmly believe that the citizens need to look at that every 3 to 5 years and vote on it. But I do support it. I think that it's a necessary part of our responsibility as taxpayers, and I will be voting yes.
Thank you. Carlton?
I also support it. It's basic infrastructure and public safety, and I do support it.
Thank you. Brad?
I support the 3% sales tax. The discussion I'd like to have is about exempting food, heating oil, electricity, and water and sewer, basic necessities. I really find that when I say exempting food, and I'm not talking potato chips, I'm talking eggs, milk, meat, vegetables. It's just absolutely immoral, in my opinion, to tax food. And California doesn't do it. Washington doesn't do it. It's not a burden on our stores. It's a simple software fix. And I think that the community really ought to have a discussion on taxing food and other basic necessities.
Thank you. Jesse?
I too, am a yes vote on extending our 3% portion of the sales tax. Those dollars help support our police department. They help support our fire department. And they help build some basic infrastructure here in Juneau. Our job as assembly members will be to make sure that those things are operating and being done as efficiently as possible.
Thank you. Randy?
Thank you. I support the extension of the sales tax at this time. The city needs to work to grow new sources of revenue, encourage new business development, new employment development, so that we have more people sharing the tax burden. And that every now and then the citizens should vote on whether or not we want to extend the sales tax. We may grow our economy enough to where the sales tax is no longer necessary, and we can exempt food or we can eliminate the sales tax for everyone. And I'm working for those types of solutions. Thank you.
Jenny?
I support it. We can opt to renew our temporary 3% sales tax, and we have to use it wisely. That's what we said. Taxes is an unwelcome issue. But if it's necessary for us to fund our projects that are immediately needed by our family and our community to fund services, especially a lot of services for parents to ease burden of a lot of things like childcare, then that would be very good. But we cannot always extend it. As what Randy is saying, if the economy gets better, we have to use it wisely because it might not be in the next ballot the next time.
Thank you. Well, it's 9:15, so I'm going to do one more question. We need to do one more question, and then we'll have our wrap-up. But this question for Carlton: what is the greatest challenge facing Juneau today, and what do you want to do about it?
The greatest challenge that Juneau has today is convincing itself, and we can do it, that we have an optimistic future. And we have a lot to be thankful for. We have a lot of opportunities. We can inspire our youth. We need to promote the capital. This is the challenge. We need to change our paradigm and look at the bright side. And that's what I intend to do on the assembly, because we are the envy in many ways of progressive cities across America. You know, we're going to be the spotlight for Southeast Alaska going forward. Our neighbors, their population is declining. We have an opportunity to grow and grow in a sensible way. So that is what I want to work on.
Thank you. Brad?
The greatest challenge that Juno's going to have is in about 24 months, and gas and heating oil is at $8 a gallon, and how are we going to meet our energy needs? We need more electricity. We need more electricity now. We need to get Dorothy Lake 2 up and running. We need to start whatever we can do to help ALMP get that operation going. We need to work with our neighbors to build out this electrical grid, bring a line in from Blue Lake and Sitka, pick up Thacket, Thayer Lake on Admiralty, run it right up to Greens Creek, and then send that electricity to us over our $40 million line at North Douglas. Seriously, with us printing money and the Federal Reserve printing money, and if you saw the market today and what they said, we are going to see substantial inflation in energy costs. And it's because we're printing money. And that's got to stop. And we have got to take care of our energy needs, or we'll all be in serious shape, all of our budgets.
Thank you. Jesse?
You know, I think the greatest challenge facing Juneau today really is our housing shortage. It's restricting the growth of our economy. People are choosing not to start businesses here because they can't afford the added risk of not finding housing or not being able to afford their housing. But I've talked about that at some length, and city government doesn't have the luxury of one at a time focus. So I think that another tremendous challenge facing Juneau is Mount Garbage. It's a medium-term solution to a permanent problem. That thing will be 140-some feet tall, in depending on who you listen to, 25 or 28 years. In 28 years, my younger daughter will be my age. I'm not done with Juneau. She won't be done with Juneau. We don't have a place to build another landfill. We're going to have to deal with it now.
Thank you. Randy?
The biggest problem facing Juneau is that we need to protect our quality of life. We have the resources to do it with. What we need is a proper focus on the various things that we have to take care of. The landfill, a good comprehensive solid waste management strategy, a way to remediate that landfill. Those are resources waiting to be turned into useful products again. It's the ultimate form of recycling if you reclaim a landfill. We need to do things like that, preserve our quality of life, protect our jobs, protect our values, and we can't just let a few people do it. The community has to get behind solutions. We have a variety of solutions. They just lack enough support to launch them. We need your support to do them. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenny?
Yes, the biggest problem that's facing Juneau right now is about having to keep everything in Juneau, what we have, we're enjoying right now. We have to be efficient in our transportation. We have to look up the rising cost of electricity and heating fuel. We have to start being sensible of protecting our environment to start recycling from, I think so we have to before it's too late. And as what Jesse was said, we cannot have Mount Garbage to be a ski resort, but we have to level it because we could smell it, touch it, and see it. And at the same time, we have to make sure that Juneau is a welcoming city. And we can keep that here, and by building everything that is expected of a capital city.
Thank you. Lauren?
Am I allowed to say ditto five times?
on the greatest challenge facing Juneau?
On the greatest challenge of Juneau, I think it's been well explained by everybody here. What I would add, and it sort of builds on something that Carlton had mentioned earlier, is that we have a great opportunity here in healthcare to be a core part of Southeast Alaska. And I think we need to look at the education system both at the high school and also at the university, that we can train local citizens to remain here and be productive, to be part of that healthcare solution. I think it is an economic engine that we can grow on in this town, but it would help keep people interested in school and would keep people wanting to remain and to live in Juneau and have really good quality professional careers.
Thank you. Now we'll move to the closing section, and each candidate will have 30 seconds to wrap up and to say anything that they would like to about their campaign, and we'll start with Carlton.
Thank you. What I offer the voters of Juneau, I believe, is experience in working in both nonprofit and profit arenas, and I'm very proud of the public service record that I've had over the last 35 years. I've also gained a great deal of skill in negotiating agreements for others and in my own business, and I believe that's a skill at the Assembly. I know what the bright line is between policy and administration, and I'm looking forward to working for Juneau's future.
Thank you. Next, Lauren.
I think that over the 35 years that I've lived in Juneau, I've learned a lot about this community. It's time for myself to step up and use some of those skills for the betterment of the community. I think that I have the skills necessary to be on the Assembly. Part of those skills, I think, is to listen. Part of it is to analyze. And part of it is to make as great a decision and best decision for Juneau that we can make. And I would appreciate your support.
Jenny Del Rosario.
Rosario.
Oh, Rosario. I'm sorry.
Yes, I believe in good government, and I believe that the public official that is willing to serve should learn how to listen first. Because listening by listening, we can do more. It's because we can't work on what we think and speculate, but what are the needs of our constituents. And I'm ready to go to work. I'm adaptable. I'm flexible. I have the energy. I'll bring it into the Assembly. Thank you. Vote for me on October 4th.
Thank you. Randy Wanamaker.
Thank you. I bring experience, 9 years as an Assemblyman to the table, and I can start being efficient from the first day. I also bring my time on the school board. I'm willing to put that all to work for the community. I believe in the future of our community, and I'm willing to work to help us get there. I listened to the people while I was on the Assembly before, and most of you will remember that I was prepared when I came to the Assembly meetings. I reason and I think about my decisions before I make them, and I can explain my decisions, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Jesse Keel.
Thank you. Thanks again to the League for this wonderful forum and to everyone who's been listening tonight. I am running for the City Assembly because I want to keep working for Juneau. I want to keep working hard to keep Juneau the kind of place we love and make it an even better community, to meet Juneau's challenges and to take advantage of our opportunities. I don't know everything. I hope you'll come and talk to me, especially when you hear me going wrong, because you don't want an Assembly member who knows everything. You want an Assembly member who'll listen to you. I hope to be that Assembly member for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Brad?
Well, as many of you know, I've told you I'm a registered investment advisor, and the last few years, you know, that's been kind of a humbling experience, and so I know I'm not always right. I'm taught that all the time. So a vote for Brad is a vote for someone who's got nearly 24 years of organizational analysis, cost-benefit analysis, and financial analysis. Things that I want to work on are to protect and enhance Juneau as the capital city. I see the next 10 years as being the most biggest threat we've been under in the last since statehood. I want to enhance public infrastructure and, most importantly, attract private sector investments. So thank you, League of Women Voters. Appreciate the opportunity, and thank you out in the audience.
Thank you. I want to thank the candidates for their participation, KTOO for airing the forum, and Lori Sika of CBJ for use of the chambers and sound system. And thanks to the League members and audience members for providing candidate questions. Additional information on the League of Women Voters is available on the Internet at www.lwv.org or www.junolwv.org. Please vote on October 4th. If you will be out of town, stop by the Assembly Chambers between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and cast an absentee ballot. For the League of Women Voters and KTOO-FM, I'm Cheryl Geeby.